we observed that indeed there was a very particular pattern associated with the types of positions that women were getting. And in very, very simple terms, those were suboptimal positions. They were precarious positions. So that women were often given leadership opportunities that men didn't want, or they were given them when they were a bit of a poison chalice, or when there were problems kind of in the pipeline of some form or other.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix. It's a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. We've all heard the term the glass ceiling, which is often used to describe the invisible barrier that women face as they approach leadership positions. But what happens when women access leadership positions? Are all leadership positions the same? And what are some of the challenges that women leaders are likely to encounter? In this episode, we're going to unpack the glass cliff phenomenon, a term coined by researchers Alexander Hazelim and Michelle Ryan. In today's episode, Alexander will share with us what the glass cliff is, why it happens, and more importantly, what organizations can do to address it.
So I think like all of your listeners will be familiar with the idea of the glass ceiling. The idea there is that that's an invisible barrier to women's progress. So, you know, as a woman, you would join an organization, you would work hard, you'd sort of progress up to a certain level, and then something unspecified would sort of stop you progressing. And the idea was that there are a whole raft of barriers, psychological, structural, and so on, that just interfere with women's progress in a way that isn't true for men. So I guess that idea, I think, has been entrenched and sort of well understood and well documented for the last sort of 50 years or so. And really, it relates to the quantity of senior positions that women get in organizations. So the idea that if you look at the upper ranks or the upper reaches of an organization, you know, there aren't a lot of opportunities for women. And that's obviously true, and there's lots of evidence for it, and it's still true. But nevertheless, over that, you know, last half century, some progress has been made, and there are more women now in senior leadership positions. Again, one would want more, but, you know, depending on the metrics and the measures and the context and so on. For example, you see, you know, in some countries, you might see 30% of women, for example, on company boards. Well, obviously, you probably want 50%. But the point there is that more and more women are breaking through that glass ceiling. And our work, this is work I did with my colleague Michelle Ryan at the University of Exeter, was really interested in the question of quality, not just quantity. So what were the nature of positions that women were getting once they were breaking through the glass ceiling? And via a range of different kind of routes, we observed that indeed there was a very particular pattern associated with the types of positions that women were getting.
According to Alex, their research showed that when it comes to leadership positions, women don't always get access to the same opportunities to lead as men do.
And in very, very simple terms, those were suboptimal positions. They were precarious positions. So that women were often given leadership opportunities that men didn't want, or they were given them when they were a bit of a poison chalice, or when there were problems kind of in the pipeline of some form or other. So whereas men, you know, men have some of those jobs too, but men have a higher proportion of cushy, as it were, leadership positions. And one of the characteristics of women in leadership is they get fewer cushy positions and more precarious positions. And that notion of precariousness was what gave rise to this idea of the glass cliff. Like you're in a situation where you're vulnerable, you're exposed, and there's a likelihood of falling. And over the last 15 or so years, we've spent a lot of time documenting that.
Here, Alex shares some of the underlying reasons as to why this happens.
One is a very, very simple one. It's just in-group bias. Most of the people at the top of organizations are men, and they prefer to appoint fellow men to good positions. Okay, that's not the cause of all glass cliffs, but it's a cause in certain industries and certain contexts. Other things relate to people's beliefs about women and the kinds of jobs they're good at. And another thing that Michelle and I have documented is a phenomenon called the think crisis, think female. So the idea that women are particularly good at cleaning up a mess or managing crisis, whereas men are maybe better when everything's going swimmingly. So people have this idea of women as, you know, crisis managers, which is interesting because there's also in the organizational field a very well-documented effect called the think manager, think male phenomenon. So if you just ask people to think of, you know, just close your eyes, think of a manager, who are you thinking of? Okay, most people are going to be thinking of a man. But then you say, think of someone who'd be really good to manage a crisis, it's much more likely they're going to be thinking of a woman. Okay. Another factor, I could take your whole podcast up just documenting all the multiple causes here, but another one is the perceived expendability of women. So the idea that, you know, a man, his job, that's his whole livelihood, and it's incredibly important for him that he's not exposed to really high levels of risk, whereas women, you know, well, if it all goes wrong and, you know, it all goes pear-shaped, well, you know, it doesn't really matter because it's only their career. You know, they've got other things they could or should perhaps be doing in some people's eyes. Another thing is just lack of support and lack of opportunity. So as a woman, if I'm a bloke and I'm going for a senior job, if there's actually, you know, crap in the pipeline, someone might just say, hey, Alex, you know, I probably wouldn't go for that job because, you know, there's all these problems. But if I don't have anybody looking out for me, nobody's got my back, nobody would tell me those things.
Importantly, the glass cliff phenomenon is something that happens for all minority groups.
I mean, we've done a lot of work looking at these same pattern of facts for people of color and people who are disadvantaged or disabled. I think the same basic patterns are true for kind of all minority groups in a particular sense. And it's certainly the case that the women who succeed in leadership often have, as it were, other things going for them, like good social connections. There's a sort of intersectionality here. There's no question about that.
The glass cliff costs women, not just in terms of their careers, but also in terms of their mental health. Here, Alex outlines the long-term impact on women.
I think, you know, 10, 15 years ago when we started out on this research, where, you know, a lot of women found themselves as the solo person in this kind of situation. I think now there's much more awareness, actually, for example, of the glass cliff. But, you know, they experience very high levels of stress and anxiety and burnout. And one of the things that we documented was that had an impact on women's kind of motivation, their kind of appetite for leadership responsibility, a pretty obvious way in which one might respond to some of the very peculiar challenges that you face as a woman in leadership is that you say, I've sort of had enough of that and I don't really want to do it anymore and I'd rather go off and do something else. So the dynamic there is one that can like spin women out and, if you like, and they don't always end up being thrown off the cliff. They sometimes just decide to walk off down the steps at the back, as it were, rather than have the ignominy and all the pain associated with, you know, being thrown under the bus. But nevertheless, the point there is that the overall experience of leadership for them is one that's more intense and more challenging and then more stressful. Now, I think, of course, there are people who work their way kind of through that, who are kind of survivors of that abuse. If you want to put a positive spin on that, you can say that women's experience is, if you like, steal them for the challenges of leadership in a way that sometimes I think men aren't steeled, especially people who have had just one long chain of, you know, as it were, sort of cushy numbers.
When it comes to what organizations can do to address this issue, Alex says that awareness and action are critical.
There are structural choices that organizations, parties, and so on, societies can make to really actually get to the nitty-gritty, I think, reasonably straightforwardly. And I'm a big fan of quotas and targets. And you just say, look, this is not right. This is something we've got to get rid of. And actually, I think if you grasp the nettle there and recognize the problem, it takes time. But there's no doubt that you can deal with these kind of issues. And again, I think motivation and will, political will, is absolutely critical. The big alarm bell for me is if you don't think you have a problem, you've got a problem. And if you do recognize that you have a problem, then we can probably make a progress. And as you say, that always has to be a whole of organization, whole of institution kind of solution. It isn't something that women could or should deal with entirely on their own. No, of course, men have to be part of the analysis. They have to be part of the solution. They have to own the solution, as do women. But I would argue that's no different for any other kind of social or organizational issue or problem. You know, no organizational problem is ever solved by only a minority of people taking ownership of it. It's just a nonsense to imagine that that would be the case. And again, if you are sincere or authentic about wanting to eliminate this problem, and not everybody is, then I think it's not that hard to do.
While the glass cliff is not something that women can fix, it is something that women leaders can become more aware of. Here, Alex shares some ideas for how women leaders can navigate the impact of the glass cliff.
You know, I think social support has a lot going for it. You know, I think, firstly, you know, being aware of the risks or what the lie of the land, I think, is important, and getting input from other people. But also, you know, I think there's lots of evidence that women in organizations do a lot better where they have the support of other women or networks that are supporting women and are authentic in that aspiration, rather than, again, sometimes those schemes can be window dressing, and actually the people who put their names forward for them are, you know, I think their motives are a bit mixed. But I think, you know, getting support, getting recognition for your situation, and being sort of forewarned and forearmed, and having plans for how you're going to deal with those things, but also just don't make them personal plans, make them group-based collective plans that everybody understands and everybody is sensitized to. I think that's actually is kind of really critical.
When it comes to the glass cliff, men and particularly male leaders play a critical role in supporting women.
I mean, again, I think having an open discussion about these kind of issues, and I think doing a kind of an audit of your organization. In Australia, we were dealing with a big organization, I won't name it, and we're having some conversations with them about this, and they said, oh, that's kind of interesting. Do you think we might have a problem? And I said, I don't know, it would be very strange if you didn't, but given how widespread these kind of issues are. So we went in and we did this kind of audit, and indeed, one of the key things was they had a graduate training program which was meant to be accelerating leaders into key positions that would then, you know, set them up in terms of their career. But it turns out that the trajectory of people through and the other side of that graduate program were very, very different from men and women. And actually, after they came out of that program, the men were something like 3 times more likely to get a leadership job that was associated with the core business of the organization, whereas women were getting thrown off into things like HR and stuff that was really on the fringes of the organization. And anyway, by the time that we'd done this research, because these things take time and energy, they had actually had the change of leadership themselves in this organization. And it turns out that the new person had an absolutely zero appetite for this information and really just didn't want to know, like in a very big way. Well, again, I think if you are concerned about those issues, you have to be interested in finding out the truth. And then you have to be interested in engaging with the truth that is uncovered. And again, I think that's not something you should take on yourself. You should take it on with, you know, your colleagues, and you should collectively, again, male and female colleagues, agree on a program, a plan to, if necessary, bring about organizational change.
Finally, Alex shares his thoughts on how workplaces can create cultures that enable all employees to thrive.
You know, organizations do lots of kind of audits of, you know, their business. But I think there is a lot to be said for doing a kind of an identity audit and a culture audit, where you basically look at what are the values that we kind of are instantiated in the various practices that we're engaged in as an organization, where do they need to be kind of improved? And again, I think there is increasing recognition of the need for that kind of approach. And indeed, the other point I would make is that's what all good leadership is about. I mean, we make the point that leadership is a process of identity management. So again, this is an issue for men and women leaders. You know, what type of organization do we want to be? Who are we, and what do we want to be doing in the world? And if you get the right answers to those kind of questions, then I think lots of positive outcomes flow from it. But if you're not willing to interrogate what you do, or indeed if you want to cover up the things which may not be to everybody's taste and maybe actually problematic in the ways that we suggested, then, you know, you're starting from a very bad place. And I think things are only really going to get worse on these dimensions.
On this podcast, we try to shed light on the different challenges that women face in their careers as a result of how gender inequality shows up in workplaces. The glass cliff is really just one of many challenges that women face in their careers, but getting to know the different barriers is really the starting point for fixing them. Both men and women, and even organizations, can take action to dismantle the glass cliff, but this really starts with recognizing that it exists and understanding how it works. On today's Fairy Godboss Insights, we'll be talking about the different ways that organizations can attract and recruit more diverse talent. In 2017, PricewaterhouseCoopers released a report entitled Winning the Fight for Female Talent: How to Gain the Diversity Edge Through Inclusive Recruitment. The study involved nearly 328 organizations across a variety of sectors in 18 countries. The research shared the top practices that had the most impact on recruitment efforts. These include establishing gender diversity recruitment targets, delivering diversity training to interviewers, and establishing equality policies. 71% of employers said that these diversity practices were having an impact on their recruitment efforts. 39% said the practices led to increased levels of female applicants, as well as increased levels of female graduate and experienced hires. I really hope you guys enjoyed our episode today. If you haven't already, please subscribe to our podcast and our newsletter, The Fix, at michellepking.com/thefix. We've also provided a link to the sign up in our show notes. Have a great day, and I'll catch you all again next week.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.